At the foot of the mountains, amidst enormous boulders resembling ancient giants frozen in time, a stream with crystal clear water flowed. Myosotis. Scattered like playful dots in this austere landscape, tinted the water in various shades of blue. Their delicate stems trembled with every new gust of warm wind, while sunlight danced merrily on their tiny petals.
Perhaps this is heaven,
thought Oksana, savoring the murmur of the stream. This pleasant sound immersed her in a relaxed state, and alongside the harmony reigning in her soul, she felt a surge of new strength within herself. Oksana was a charming young woman with curly fair hair. A smile never left her face, and dimples always adorned her cheeks, giving Oksana's face a childlike spontaneity. She had only recently begun her studies at the school, yet she eagerly absorbed every word of the keeper, contemplating it from the perspective of an experienced, wise person, although maturity, as it seemed to her, was still hidden behind some distant blurred line. Alongside Oksana, many other disciples enjoyed the murmur of the stream and the colorful array of local flora. Each of them brought a small mat to comfortably settle on the grass and feel the energy of the earth, which nourished everything around. The keeper stood before the disciples in his loose, long chiton, adorned on a hand-woven fabric, embroidered with whimsical patterns. He had a sincere smile on his face, which always made his disciples feel at ease. It seemed as if the smile emanated not from his lips, but from his heart, which burned within the sage like a torch with a blazing flame. Yet, this flame was not dangerous, for it bestowed light and warmth upon those around him. The sky was cloudless. One could think that some invisible artist took a large brush, dipped it in blue paint, covered a vast canvas with it, and executed everything with finesse, not allowing themselves to neglect mastery in their beloved craft. The air was filled with the pleasant scent of flowers and herbs. On the horizon rose mountains, their peaks occasionally adorned with a thin veil of snow. When the disciples comfortably settled on their mats, the keeper of knowledge addressed them, imbuing his voice with infinite love.
Welcome, dear disciples. Look, what a beautiful place we have met you today. Here harmony and peace reside, something that we all lack in life sometimes. In such corners of the planet, miraculous things happen to humans. The heart loses impulsive urges, and the mind is cleansed of vile thoughts. Today, you are given another wonderful opportunity to learn something new. Are you ready for it?
The disciples nodded, and smiles also appeared on their sunlit faces. The keeper managed to instill positive vibes in everyone. The beginning of the conversation was proclaimed by a raised hand adorned with several bracelets made of hefty mat stones. It belonged to a slender woman in a long orange dress. She had light blue eyes and long hair braided into a tight braid.
Master, today we have a question related to the song about Little Helicopter,
she said, and a moment later began to hum lines from a well-known song. Her ringing and pure voice could be compared to the babbling of a brook, which the disciples occasionally glanced at.
Helicopter once decided to soar across the ocean, and the search succeeded. The little one overcame. You in this matter are a novice. I am not so big, but I want to see what's there. Antaeus shines, protons shine, a of the little daredevil, but the sun will jump in and trusting in luck, he gathered, and it was so. Giant.
Everyone was so immersed in this singing that they imagined themselves as little helicopters, freely soaring above the earth. When the woman stopped singing, the disciples seemed to wake up from a deep sleep and opened their eyes. In the distance, sharp mountain peaks were still visible.
What does this mean? How should it be understood correctly?
Asked the disciple, maintaining a melodious tone in her voice.
It means, Margot, that a person must have a great dream.
Loudly pronounced the keeper, and spread his arms, wishing to illustrate the magnitude of this dream.
If a person has a great dream, which is not connected to their selfish nature and is not aimed at feeding their ego, then this great dream can make the person a giant. A person may be small, not very capable, so to speak, entirely mediocre. But if they have this huge dream, it makes them a giant, because they connect to some great idea. Thanks to this, they start developing, gaining a lot of energy and knowledge. Do you understand?
Margot and all the other disciples agreed with what the master said. It was evident from their attentive and conscious faces.
Master, but many people starting from childhood are mocked by those around them, teased, laughed at for any of their endeavors. How can you hold on to a dream when nobody believes in you?
Asked the boy with chestnut hair and bangs covering one eye, with a hint of sadness in his voice.
Yes, it happens, Andre,
nodded the keeper, but immediately rushed to inspire all the attendees who were immersed in deep contemplation. This question even brought tears to Anna's eyes, reminding her of an unpleasant personal story. Because of poor discipline at school, she was seen as a hopeless child by teachers, not showing any promise.
Ha ha. Such a silly one won't get any job.
She remembered in horror the words of her class teacher. But Anna was hired and even assigned a prestigious position. And so now, on a beautiful summer day, surrounded by spiritual and peace-loving people, those old taunts seemed to her like a terrible dream.
Let's suppose people laughed at someone. No one believed they would achieve anything. But they were persistent and believed in luck. And every person, regardless of circumstances, must have this persistence and carry great ideas into the world,
continued the keeper.
If we believe in luck, then we can really change. Serving a great idea, a goal, helps to achieve much. If a great person sets themselves a trivial goal, then it impoverishes them, makes them trivial. This base goal may involve wanting to appropriate something for oneself or kill someone, for example. Such petty goals should be feared. Only a great, enormous dream will lead us to something equally great, bright, and good.
In the eyes of the disciples, sparks of bright, sun-like spiritual enlightenment flared up. Even Andre pushed aside locks of hair from his forehead and looked at the keeper with both eyes for the first time. The young man had already begun to think about what elevated dream could possess him. After a brief pause, which the master always made, when he wanted to give his followers a few minutes for reflection, he spoke again.
Therefore, my dear ones, we must consider what our goal is. What do I want right now? What am I striving for? These are the questions we need to ask ourselves. If it's a base, unworthy goal, then you should renounce it, perhaps even laugh at it. After all, it's so absurd. Then you need to set your sights on another goal. What should it be?
Great,
the disciples pronounced in unison. This word, like a short but powerful mantra, now filled their consciousness entirely.
Of course,
affirmed the keeper, softly clapping his hands.
Petty goals destroy us, while great ones turn us into great and important people.
Accompanied by the harmonious sound of the stream, each of the disciples asked themselves this question.
What am I striving for?
Some people's goals proved to be worthy. To open a shelter for animals, to become a person who would bring benefit and joy to others, to learn self-control, to break free from addiction, from a bad habit, and then teach many others. However, some, with regret, discovered that their desires were not as elevated as they would have liked. And, as the keeper emphasized in his speech,
"Thank you, Master, for, as always, leading us out of our blind state,"
exclaimed Catherine in a trembling voice, a girl who started attending school classes a couple of weeks ago.
"Now I understand that everything that worries me is just me. I always wanted to outshine others in whatever way possible, to be the first, to shine on a pedestal, to receive ovations and compliments. After your words, I understand that there's no need to nurture selfishness in oneself. Otherwise, instead of becoming a respected and influential person, I'll achieve the opposite effect."
"Well done, Catherine,"
exclaimed the keeper.
"Every time, like a child, I rejoice in your little discoveries. Truly, knowledge makes our lives happy."
The next question was asked by an elderly man with thick gray eyebrows resembling branches covered with hoarfrost, which made his gaze seem overly serious and even tense.
"Master, it seems to us that it's not easy to reach the goal because every being, as is known, has its own goal. For a person, like a bug, the goals are only about eating, drinking, lying, sleeping. Other beings have different goals. It turns out, one must constantly remind oneself of the set goal. If a person has been possessed by a dream, to enlighten. If this dream ignited them and they want to be closer to the master, however, then other dreams arise and overshadow it. As a result, the great intention leaves us for the whole day."
"Of course, Edward,"
echoed the measured and deeply resonant voice of the keeper.
"But it's necessary for a person to be persistent and, despite everything, believe in luck. There must be persistence, dedication in serving this goal. Otherwise, something will hinder its realization. If we lack strong emotional commitment, then we'll succumb to bad influences, veer off the path, start to degrade, and bear the burden of meaningless animal existence. Once we have a dream, we must always remember it, live by it, ignite it within ourselves like a star. Then we'll succeed in becoming great people with great goals."
Edward's thought was picked up by a girl in a beige linen dress. Freckles were scattered all over her face, but her nearly colorless eyelashes allowed the light to shine better in her slightly squinted green eyes.
"Master, what about a goal like I want to enlighten? Is that also a selfish goal, or is it great?"
"A good question, Alice."
The keeper raised the point finger, urging special attention to his next words.
"If a person says that they want to gain knowledge to share it with others, to make their lives better and happier, to relieve their suffering, then that's not a selfish goal. But sometimes this happens. One of our unfortunate disciples wanted to enlighten because he saw himself as small and insignificant, receiving many remarks directed at him. But instead of changing, abandoning his insignificance, he set the goal to enlighten so that everyone would bow down to him. and he would lecture everyone and consider himself almost holy. In other words, this goal flattered his ego, and when a person is self-centered, they cannot achieve enlightenment.
All this time, Alice, who kept silent while gazing at the master with reverence, occasionally interlacing the fingers of her graceful hands, also decided to share her thoughts.
So, we must attain enlightenment for others, right?
Her gentle voice fit perfectly into the idol prevailing around.
And knowledge must be acquired for others to become better in order to help people? And then it's not a selfish, not a base goal? But if we aspire to gain fame, to elevate ourselves above others, then such a goal must definitely be rejected?
Excellent, Alice.
The keeper praised the girl.
That's exactly it. The enlightened one must carry the light like the sun. The sun doesn't think about itself. It gives its energy to others.
And indeed, it would be difficult to imagine what would happen now, at the foot of the mountains, if the luminary disappeared from the sky even for a moment. Darkness would immediately descend upon the earth. Flowers would turn to ashes, and the mountains would turn into blocks of iceberg, entirely composed of ice. But the sun, it was here and bathed all living things in its rays, so everything continued to live. The keeper slowly, with warmth evident in all his features, surveyed those present. Many of them raised their hands. The topic of dreams seemed to have given people wings. Even those who hadn't heard the song about Little Helicopter now clearly imagined the scale of a person's inner strength when they stand firm on their path and make constant efforts to achieve a high goal that brings happiness to the whole planet. The guru intended to give everyone the right to speak, and now he was eager to listen to the question of a petite, elderly woman in a knitted sweater. Through the lenses of her round glasses, her eyes seemed very large. They constantly moved from the stream to the forget-me-nots, from the forget-me-nots to the grass, from the grass to the mountains.
Master!
The lady's voice was so calm and pleasant that many immediately plunged into childhood and remembered their grandmothers, always generous with treats and affection.
So it seems that we must contemplate the goal, constantly expanding its boundaries, because it seems there is a goal to enlighten. I want to help people, but I don't deeply contemplate it, don't nourish it with a dream, or emotionally experience it. Is that wrong?
Correct, Grace.
The master nodded approvingly several times, causing an inspired expression to appear on the woman's face. She reached for knowledge and mentally thanked their common protector for such lengthy and interesting conversations.
We must emotionally engage in our dream. It's not enough to think that we need to help people if we don't live by this intention. We can affirm it, but emotionally immersing ourselves in some absurdity. All emotions must be redirected towards this goal. Only then will it start to function. And if the dream of serving God and helping people exists somewhere in the depths of our memory, but we are far from it and don't live it with every particle of our soul, then it won't work. That which our emotions are directed to is what will work. If our attention is directed towards the great, then the great works. If towards the lowly is activated. So now you understand that it's necessary to analyze not only what our goal is, but also observe whether we are emotionally engaged in it. This is an extremely important aspect.
The next question was asked by a girl with a short haircut. Her stiff black hair and almond-shaped brown eyes made her resemble a Japanese woman. She had pale skin, through which thin blue veins were visible in places.
Great Guru.
She looked straight at the keeper and immediately felt warmth in her heart, like from a fireplace crackling with burning wood.
If we set a goal for ourselves, to be closer to the Master. On one hand, it's very strong, lofty, and leads to God. But on the other hand, it's quite selfish. Unfortunately, at this stage, there's not a deep awareness of the need to help people. Maybe it exists at the level of the soul, Atman, but it hasn't been emotionally experienced yet. What should be done in this case? It turns out, most of us are driven by such a selfish goal because we want to get closer to you?
Darina, it's not about getting closer, but about helping,
the keeper said with a smile.
Because one person thinks, if I get closer to the Master, then maybe I'll have more comfortable conditions. I'll receive fewer remarks, and I'll eat tastier food. If a person's thought process is like this, then the goal that guides them is based on selfishness, and accordingly, it won't help them. The concept of getting closer to the Master can be interpreted differently. The closest disciples sometimes forget to eat, to sleep, because all the time, day and night, they think about the Master's affairs and how to help the advancement of the great cause. This is the right understanding of getting closer to the Master. If a person thinks about how being near the Master will allow them to relax, benefit only themselves, gain some privileges, then it's bad. We must think about how to help the Master save and guide lost souls onto the path of truth. These are the best and right intentions.
The guy in the plaid shirt, who had been formulating his question for a long time, finally prepared to voice it. When the keeper looked at him, he raised his hand and got the floor.
Great one!
This word, spoken by the youth, seemed to mark the beginning of some strong and bright prayer.
Can we say that we have two main goals, two main directions? Self-discovery, spiritual development, and helping people? You mentioned that the most important thing is to observe ourselves, the processes happening inside. I remembered such a situation. A person is asked why he didn't fulfill 90% of his duties or did them poorly. And he answers that despite this, he delved into himself several times, discovered some processes within himself. It turns out that the person was engaged in his own development, but at the same time, missed the opportunity to help people. But sometimes it's the opposite. A person is asked about his spirituality, and he answers that he is fully immersed in work and busy with tasks. So, should we find a balance between these two goals because one without the other is impossible? Should there be some golden mean?
Yes, Arthur,
agreed the Master.
We need to find a balance. But usually if a person is engaged in spiritual development, it means they are in a good state. And while in it, they always help everyone. And if they have disconnected from development and don't want to progress further, started thinking only about themselves, then things go badly for them. So when performing spiritual practices, there's rarely poor work execution. Usually, everything combines and harmonizes. Good spiritual condition leads to success in affairs. Conversely, bad and negative condition only sows failure.
Thank you, Master.
Arthur expressed his gratitude with a wide smile.
Indeed, when harmony reigns in a person's soul, it positively affects all spheres of their life. I just remembered one acquaintance of mine who regularly engages in spiritual practices. And despite having a heavy workload, she successfully copes with all her tasks and doesn't even complain about the circumstances. Always cheerful, striving for the best, she charges the people around her with extraordinary energy.
The master nodded and bestowed Arthur with a gaze filled with wisdom and kindness. He always liked it when disciples shared stories from their lives and drew conscious, deep analogies. This contributed to the accumulation of rich experience for them. The girl, with light pink blush adorning her cheeks, asked the sage a question. Her hair fell on her shoulders in thin strands, like that of a forest nymph caught in a downpour. Her green dress with long sleeves made her look like a mysterious forest inhabitant.
Master!
Her voice sounded like the melodious tune of a flute.
There's such a bad part when you set a goal to prove yourself right, to get justice. This goal always manifests in me. I may not even think about it, but as soon as I disconnect for a moment, that's it. The goal takes hold of me. So, if I think about enlightenment, about how to help the master, then this habit is stronger, and I'm not working on it enough?
Yes, Christina,
said the keeper, touching his right temple with the index finger of his right hand.
We need to think more about how to help the cause. If a person wants to prove their righteousness, it means they start thinking about themselves. This makes them feel bad. But if they think about how to help the cause more, so that it's realized faster and more effectively, then it's undoubtedly a good thought that will help them. And as soon as they start thinking about themselves, all the negativity is immediately attracted to them. Negative emotions, state, the person immediately feels bad. So we need to think about how to help the cause. If we care about that, then we start to grow, to develop.
How to help the cause?
This question surfaced in the consciousness of every disciple. Now everyone understood that if they stop thinking about their own problems and bring the light of knowledge to other people, even those unaware of the existence of the school, then the world will have a chance for transformation. Now, the keeper granted the floor to another girl, whose red hair was gathered in a bun. Long earrings resembling clusters of grapes dangled from her ears.
Wise master!
She slightly bowed her head down to show her respect to the master.
We have such a goal, to soar. I myself don't yet understand what it means, but I feel that these are elevated emotions, states. At certain moments in life, I start to ponder how to make everyone soar like birds. Should we strive for such high goals with altruistic motives?
Yes, Simona.
Once again, echoed the voice of the master, full of high vibrations.
If we think about ourselves, about our lofty flight, that everyone will applaud, then we will feel bad because that's selfishness. But if we think about how to help people, how to attain elevated states and pass them on to others, how to perform many bright and good deeds, then we will truly soar. We will dwell in a state of grace.
After these words of the master, as if to prove his assertions, a graceful bird figure appeared in the sky. Its wings were spread wide and free. It soared. Enraptured by this beautiful creature, which the sky allowed closer than anyone else, a young man in an orange shirt with a flat round pendant on a thin golden thread shifted his gaze to the master and spoke with a soft, almost velvety voice.
Keeper, there's a sister who complains every day that she approaches the tasks of the power so selflessly, helps the master, and is involved in the common cause, but each time her merits go unnoticed. Am I correct in understanding that she's mistaken, claiming that she constantly thinks about the cause? Or am I holding a somewhat incorrect opinion?
Romeo, this seems to be already some lowly goal,
remarked the master, scratching his chin in deep thought.
Because the closest disciples don't think about praise. As I mentioned, they often forget to eat because they really constantly think about the cause. A person should be in such a state then they will always receive rewards and encouragement.
Yes.
Romeo nodded and caught the master's thought.
So if we are focused on ourselves, then we start to become lazy, cunning, compete with others for praise, get upset, angry. In short, we become subject to vices for our own benefit. And this means wrong, lowly thoughts.
Absolutely correct, Romeo,
exclaimed the master joyfully.
Therefore, there must be a great goal. I serve God, help people, and the master. It leads to salvation, happiness, enlightenment. Just engage in this goal, and nothing will bother you anymore. Neither praise nor anything else. Because at that moment, our experiences will be sublime, and these experiences will nourish us, and all other matters we will solve easily. Even without worrying about it ourselves, we will gain recognition and praise. It will happen naturally, and if we are fixed on something lowly, then various reasons for distress arise. It's better to engage in the higher goal and forget about oneself. Then ease and freedom will come.
Master.
The woman with chestnut hair and radiant eyes the color of burnt sugar addressed the sage.
So, does it mean that we should strive not to earn something above the norm as a measure of our efforts, but strive for divine grace?
Undoubtedly, Jamila,
replied the keeper, embracing all the disciples with his gaze, which made them feel infinitely warm inside.
When a person is in a state of lowly desires, praise is important to him. Encouragement is important. What he can get is important. And if he is engaged in the cause, serving the goal selflessly, then he doesn't even notice that he hasn't eaten or slept. He is, as it were, within this goal, lives in it, and it sustains him, saturates him with endless energy, sublime state, emotions. Then, as you understand, everything else becomes unnoticed and not very important for him. There's no need to squander your strength on trifles. Preserve it, and you will see how easily and effortlessly everything will work out for you.
All this time during the conversation, where simple yet very deep truths were revealed, the creek continued to murmur, the forget-me-nots inclined their blue heads towards the grass, and the boulders lay motionless in their place. And only the sun seemed to be already preparing to rest. Reflecting on the essence of the dream, the disciples stopped paying attention to all material things surrounding them and immersed themselves in their inner world, in the spiritual component of being, which cannot be captured by sight or touched by hands, but can be felt by the heart and understood by the mind. Today, almost all questions had been exhausted. Yet each of the disciples continued an inner dialogue about what a true dream is, how to free oneself from selfish motives, and start helping other people to attain a great dream, the fulfillment of which could bring great benefit to the world. Only one last question remained, posed by a guy with a fancy patterned shirt. He had thick black hair and equally dark large eyes.
Master, am I correct in understanding that a person cannot live without a goal? A goal is like a lighthouse. It guides a person's movement. He cannot stand still, lounging on the couch, falling into a depressive state. That's the same as death. One must always have some goal to live and move forward. So it seems like a person chooses a goal according to the level of their soul. And if they have no goal, society imposes one on them. But attaining a high goal is practically impossible without a master, a community, awareness. Yet it's necessary. Otherwise, a person will strive for other goals, foolish, harmful, and even dangerous. Isn't it impossible to reach a high goal without a master?
Of course, Farid,
agreed the keeper.
First, a person must learn that even a high goal exists. Few speak about such things, as it's almost unheard of in society to have such goals. Therefore, most people set low-level goals for themselves. Of course, a person must come into contact with great knowledge. And then when they grasp this great knowledge, a corresponding goal arises within them. It always comes from above, from those beings who have already walked this path, attained enlightenment. They transmit knowledge to other people. From this knowledge arises the great goal, and the path opens through which it can be achieved.
After this, the master embraced everyone present with his warm, wise gaze and said,
"You, dear ones, should know this goal, as you've already had so many darshans. Therefore, you should remember, think, contemplate about it more often, immerse yourselves in it emotionally. Most importantly, know that when we engage in the great goal, we are filled with grace. We feel good. Our energy strengthens. This goal paints life in brighter colors. Forget about nonsense, about all things lowly and dark. Think only of the great. This is the only way to become happier and make people around you happy. As soon as you start indulging your ego again, everything will fall apart. Failures will haunt you again, and you will begin to feel discomfort. God tells us, do not think about yourself. Turn to the world and strive for the heavens. Then you will walk the path of life under the protection of angels."
The creek continued to murmur and murmur. Its water was crystal clear, as were the thoughts of the disciples who had just finished their conversation. The sun was almost setting on the horizon and seemed to want to drink the clear water to quench the thirst that had accumulated during the long hot day. Its rays gilded the tiny petals of the blue forget-me-nots. The air was filled with freshness and coolness and seemed to become purer. The disciples thanked the keeper with such sincerity that it became clear to him. Each of them would find their own great goal, great dream. They were bright, wise people who understood what the true purpose of man is. Now, they were moving further away from the place where they received one of the most valuable lessons in their lives. Someone carried a mat rolled up under their arms. Someone had a backpack with modest props necessary for their studies on their shoulders. Their figures, most of which were clad in orange attire, merged with the sunlight and dissolved into it, wishing to radiate the eternal light of the soul. 1. A great goal makes a person a giant. Even if a person is not a genius and does not possess outstanding physical form, a high goal can lead them to conquer great heights. 2. A high goal is one based on the desire to benefit society, help people, and change the world for the better. To attain it, one must stop focusing on oneself. 3. Emotions, mindfulness, and expression of selflessness and persistence play a significant role in achieving a high goal. If a person doesn't work on themselves, they may fall prey to lowly goals, which consist of satisfying primitive needs and instincts. 4. A goal becomes a high one in pursuit of the master only when the disciple is guided by altruistic motives and concentrates not on themselves, but on the good cause. Selfish motives, the desire to gain privileges or earn sympathy and praise, form a false goal. 5. A high goal and its realization help a person find inner peace, bring harmony and grace into their life. Pursuing lowly goals, on the other hand, deprives them of happiness.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.